We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Something about the city of New Orleans will always feel like home to me. It's one of those rare places that touches your soul and stays with you no matter where you are. Well, my guest today shares this connection to NOLA, and anytime I talk to him, it always feels just like home. Drew Brees spent 20 years as an NFL quarterback playing on the New Orleans Saints for 15 seasons. Over the years, I've become friends with Drew and his beautiful wife, Brittany. He is one of the all-time greats and one of my favorite people on earth. In 2010, Drew led the Saints to their very first Super Bowl championship, helping to bring back the spirit of the city after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. For Drew, playing for the Saints was about more than football. It was a calling to be part of something greater. Since retiring from the NFL in 2021, Drew has entered a new season in his life. You'll hear in this conversation that he is beginning his second act, taking on a career in business. He's slowing down, spending time with his family, and enjoying the little moments in life. Drew and I talked about his incredible career, life after football, and of course, we share stories of our love for the magical city of New Orleans. I'm Hoda Kotb. Welcome to my podcast, Making Space. Drew Brees, one of my favorite people on earth, so much to talk about, and I want to get to your businesses and all the new things that you're doing, but I want to start off by talking about something that you've done, which is kind of repotting. It's sort of like you take your life kind of up by the roots, and I'm sure in that moment you feel it's a little scary. It's like, are we going to live? What's happening? And then you put yourself down in more fertile ground and you grow even more. A lot of people go through transitions. You went through yours. You were in New Orleans and then, you know, you started a different life. How did you navigate that change?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest. I'm still navigating it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I retired from the game of football at age 42 years old.
Yeah.
And if you count the years that I was really serious about football, where it was a great focus in my life and I was dedicating myself to being the very best that I could be at it. You know, that was 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, 20 years in the NFL. So 28 out of 42 years. So 2/3 of my life where every decision that I made was in and around, how can I be the best leader for my team? Mm-hmm. How can I be the best quarterback, my training regimen, my recovery, you know, and all these things. And naturally, you know, my family has to, you know, adopt that mindset as well and then make the sacrifices to allow me to do that and have to have a very understanding wife and a very supportive wife and, you know, all those things. And so all of a sudden for that just to be over, you know, it's very finite.
Yes.
And while football is a sport that, you know, you see a lot of guys when they leave the game, they leave and they say, I'll never coach. I'll never this and that. And then a year later, they're coaching.
Coaching,
right? Or they're announcing.
Well, it's a love.
Well, it absolutely is a love and a passion. The game has meant so much to your life. And, you know, honestly, you gravitate towards the things where you feel like you can bring value and you have a knowledge base.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I obviously worked for NBC for a year after my career ended and was able to do broadcasting and in studio work. And, you know, I coach my kids and help out with the local high school. And so football will always be a part of my life. It will always be something that I love. I watch as a fan, but I also, I have people reaching out to me all the time to mentor them, you know, young quarterbacks or what have you. But there is a piece that, you know, it's hard to replicate the locker room.
Yeah.
Right.
I was gonna say,
and the brotherhood that takes place in the locker room, just because you go through so much together. You know, people talk about the blood, sweat, and the tears, but it's just, you know, you watch guys grow up, you know, you develop strong relationships with them. And then all of a sudden, you know, that's gone. You know, the feeling of game day,
Yes.
You know, the preparation.
Yes.
People don't understand the preparation that goes into just getting to Sunday.
Yes.
And just what you go through mentally, emotionally, psychologically, physically, so that you can walk out on the field on Sunday and feel invincible and feel that you're the best in the world at something and then actually go out and execute it. And there's great satisfaction in that. And it's hard to replicate that too.
How do you, because, you know, whenever someone's making a transition, you're used to a schedule, you're used to what you were doing, you knew what time you got up, you had breakfast, where you had to be. And suddenly it was open. How did you learn to navigate that stuff?
Yeah, that is so true.
Yeah.
Structure was such a part of my life.
Matters,
I mean, literally every minute, every minute it was accounted for. And so all of a sudden that's gone.
Did you get lazy or anything?
It wasn't that you got lazy, but I had to be very intentional about, you know, what I was getting up and how I was starting my day.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I did was I created non-negotiables for myself.
Like what?
And I think this is important for anybody in their life, but like I'm an early riser.
Mm-hmm.
I love getting up early and feeling like I'm going to get 2 hours of work done while I know the rest of the family is fast
sleeping.
Asleep
yes,
and, you know, before
too.
School.
Yeah.
But, I start my day with my Bible and a cup of coffee, two cups of coffee, actually. I call it my caffeine in Jesus.
Oh.
And honestly, that's just how I set my mind for the day. And that's my meditation. That's my
your,
time.
That's your time. Your
and also just to, you know, plan for the day, maybe reflect, think about the things that I want to accomplish that day. And then obviously the day starts with the kids and it's nuts. And then end of the day is just that quiet time with the kids where you feel like the busyness of the day doesn't really allow you a lot of quality time with kids or, you know, my wife. But those moments at the end of the day where you really feel like you can connect with your kids or your wife is that those were like my non-negotiable moments. Then everything in between was okay as long as I had those
two, the
established,
bookends.
Right?
Yeah. Did you ever feel lost? Did you ever?
I did. Yeah. I don't know if lost is the right word. I mean, I get why people go through depression.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I can't say I've maybe been there, but I understand how they get there and I understand why. And even for someone like me who, I mean, I played 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, never in my wildest dreams did I think that would ever be a possibility. And I'm so grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
And even along the way, I knew it was going to end at some point, right? I mean, I was trying to enjoy each and every moment and be in the moment. And yet at the same time, hey, I have to prepare for what's life after football. And so, hey, let's put this Purdue business degree to work. You know, I started engaging in extended education programs through what the NFL provided at the UPenn Wharton School of Business.
That.
Yes,
oh,
and
cool.
Stanford and the Ross School of Business at Michigan. And a lot of it was around entrepreneurship and franchising and all these things that I'm now into and really began to establish even when I was still playing football. And yet, even though I had all of those things lined up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you were ready.
Yeah, I still step away from the game and it's just like, all these other things just aren't quite as sweet or aren't quite as, you know, it doesn't give you the same
that
satisfaction.
High,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because we've interviewed a bunch of athletes, Michael Phelps, all the people who are the greats in their profession. And when they do step away, I mean, it's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And because that high is unique.
It's hard to replicate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love your career because a lot of people counted you out early on. And I think that's another part of you. You played for San Diego. They were like, it just wasn't happening. And I remember when you came to New Orleans and there was sometimes it's just like the perfect mix. What was it about your move to New Orleans that you think made you and made the team what it, what it became?
You know, that journey to New Orleans was was so interesting. There's actually really a really funny backstory to this. So I get drafted to the San Diego Chargers and I was actually the first pick of the second round.
Okay.
I was convinced I was going to be a first round pick. That's what everyone was telling me.
Yeah.
There was probably 7 to 10 teams that were drafting the first round that had basically said one way or another, like, if you're there, we're going to take you.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then draft day, there were some trades that happened. There was, kind of some interesting things, but bottom line is we got to pick number 26 and it was the Miami Dolphins.
Mm.
And my head coach, Joe Tiller, had his best friend was a scout for the Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Who had literally called him up the day of and said, if Drew is there at pick 26, we are taking
him. We're taking him, okay.
And so Coach Tiller kind of, you know, told me that quietly.
Yes.
And so I said, okay.
Great.
if nothing else, I'm sitting by the phone to pick 26. I'm rolling my Dolphins. So sure enough, pick 26 comes around. I go to the phone. It doesn't ring. Next thing I know, I'm watching on TV with Brittany and my brother there in our apartment at Purdue University. And they stand up and say, the Miami Dolphins have taken somebody else. And it was just like, I thought like that was promised.
That was me.
Like that was supposed to be me. And I fall to the second round. I go to the San Diego Chargers, which what I learned with that whole situation was, I think the pridefulness in all of us is that I want to get drafted as high as possible.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't no matter where I go. It's just, you know, it's like you this feeling of acknowledgement and respect is that, but at the end of the day, I went to the exact right place. Mm. I was in the exact right environment. It was the right system for me. I went to a place where I was really wanted.
Yes.
I had a chance to learn behind a guy named Doug Flutie for a few years, and he's still a mentor of mine. And so it was the right place for me. Mm-hmm. So here we are 5 years later, lots of struggles in San Diego, but finally get to the point where I feel like, okay, I am the franchise quarterback here.
Yeah.
I've earned this position.
Right.
I mean, I've been benched a few times. I've had to fight back, like all this adversity. Yeah. And now we're poised to make a run.
Yes.
And I'm going to be the guy.
It's me.
And then I have this tragic right shoulder injury, last game of the season, 2005, where all of a sudden I'm walking off the field. My arm is literally stuck out like this, dislocated shoulder. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm definitely not putting on a Charger uniform anymore, and I may never play the game of football anymore.
Oh my gosh. So you and thought that might have been
that
it.
I really thought that was over. And I ended up having the surgery. Dr. James Andrews down in Alabama saved my career. But at that point, you know, I was damaged goods, right? And so there weren't a lot of people clamoring to have, you know, the guy with the busted right arm as their quarterback, except for the New Orleans Saints and the Miami Dolphins. Well, here's New Orleans.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Here's New Orleans 6 months post-Katrina, right? Just totally reeling. New head coach, Sean Payton. Who's ever heard of this guy, right?
Yeah, nobody at that point.
And really nobody wanted to know, come. And I mean, they just thought this is too much. Whereas on paper, the Miami Dolphins, Coach Nick Saban. Yes,
oh,
Coach Nick Saban. People forget that.
Nick Saban
went from winning a national championship at LSU to become the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
I didn't remember that. Okay.
And had a great 2005 season. So here he was going into his second season. He had a great defense. He was looking for a quarterback.
Okay.
And ironically, I had played against him when he was at Michigan State as the head coach in the Big Ten.
Okay.
So there was a relationship there. And I felt like, to a certain extent, just on paper again, okay, here's this full circle moment.
Yep.
They had their chance to draft me.
Yep.
And now here we go. And now this is the right time, right? Because I've had to go through this growth and development cycle in San Diego. And now I'm going
now
to Miami, right? And so really it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I'm going to go on a visit to both places. I'm going to give both an equal shot.
Sure.
But just on paper, it is screaming Miami, right? So I come to New Orleans and man, they tried to roll out the red carpet. They did the best that they could. I remember them picking me up from the airport and we're riding down Airline Highway to the New Orleans Saints facility. And we are in this limo with the darkest tent you could ever imagine. I couldn't even see outside. And of course their excuse was, oh, well, you know, we wanted to give you some privacy and this and that. In reality, they didn't want me to see the devastation on that stretch of road, right? Because literally this is 6 months post-Katrina. Like 90% of the city was underwater.
Yes.
Still totally damaged. We show up to the Saints facility. Half of the facility is being used by the National Guard.
Oh, geez.
They're landing helicopters on our practice field to be able to continue to go and, you know, do these missions. And the other half was, you know, the Saints organization, Sean Payton, trying to give some semblance of stability, right, to guys like me that they're coming in, you know, looking at the team. So everything was great with the coaching staff, loved it. Everything was great with the people in the city, having a chance to go out to Emeril's restaurant and people just looking at me saying, thank you for wanting to be a part of the city. And I mean, immediately all that began to resonate. But it wasn't until Sean Payton said, all right, I'm going to take you and Brittany to show you that there's neighborhoods that you can live in. Like, we know you want to start a family. Like, there's school. Yeah. Like, we want to show you that element
that
as
part,
well. But he drives me to the North Shore, right?
Right away.
To like Mandeville, which is where he was building a home. But at the time, I mean, that was the only place where you could, you know, look normal, right? So as he's on his way back, the visit's gone perfect. Everything's been great. He, you know, roads are closed. He gets detoured. He's only been there a month.
Right.
He doesn't know where he's going. We get lost in the Lakeview neighborhood, which was the breach of the 17th Street Canal. It was one of the first breaches and completely wiped homes off a foundation. So all of a sudden we find ourselves on this road and I look to my left, just concrete slab, no house. Next one, house is halfway off the slab, Chevy truck upside down in the living room.
Yeah.
And then we turn the corner and literally the car stops. And I'm staring at Britt at this point. And then
I
come back around and there's a tugboat sitting in the middle of the road.
Oh my
tugboat,
God.
Tugboat, right? And I look at Sean Payton, his head drops. He calls our general manager and it's just like, yes, I'm lost. Yep, Drew and Brittany are in the car. Yeah, it's bad. And so he has to navigate him out of the situation. And it's funny because if you ask Sean Payton now, he says, at that moment, I was ready to drive you to Miami right now because there is no way you're coming here, right? But in fact, it was quite the opposite because Britt and I looked at each other and said, this is about so much more than just being the quarterback for another football team.
That hit you then.
It was absolutely the moment.
What happened?
Is God's calling in our life to be a part of the resurgence of one of America's greatest cities. And we knew that it was a higher calling and the opportunity to be a part of something so much greater than ourselves and so much beyond the game of football. Yes, this is what I do. Yes, this is what I'm going to work to do because I understand that winning football games does so much for the spirit of the city. But at the same time, this was an opportunity to jump full steam into the rebuilding efforts.
Can you just dig into that a little bit more? So you see the devastation and then you knew that it was a calling. Tell me a little bit about how you and Britt and your conversation about that.
You know, it was the wild part, too, was going back to when I was drafted. I remember as I'm going through all the possibilities with my agent, he's saying, you know, you've got all these great possibilities. This and he's like, really, the only place you wouldn't want to go is the New Orleans Saints. He's like, you know, it's kind of dysfunctional. It's kind of party town, like this and that. And so that was kind of in the back of my mind, too. And I think what you don't realize you've said this and it is absolutely true is that once you are in New Orleans for any period of time, it gets in your blood and you can go anywhere else, but it remains with you.
Yeah.
And there are very few places. I mean, Britton and I have had a chance to travel all over the world and literally we can be walking down the street. I remember we were walking through the tulip fields in the Netherlands and I hear somebody yell, "Who dat?" And I look and somebody's got like a Saints shirt on. But you're immediately like,
yes,
that's my best friend.
That's my best friend.
Anywhere in the world, right? Who dat? And you know you have an instant connection with somebody. And I can't think of any other
place
where that exists.
I had this total flashback because when I was looking for a job, I went to two cities, Minneapolis, which was a bigger market, paid better and all that stuff, and New Orleans. And I went to Minneapolis first and the newsroom felt like a bank. Everyone was clickety-clacking, quiet and shh. And I was like, but it seemed very professional. They won all the awards. And I literally got off the plane there and landed. And there was this, in New Orleans, there was this huge jazz band for somebody who, you know, in the airport. And I looked and there was this woman with like crystal gale hair. And her name was Gail Guidry. And she goes, "Are you Hoda?" I go, "Oh, come on in here, girl. Welcome." And I remember she wrapped me up and I was like, I think I'm working here. And I went to the newsroom. And Joe Duke, who's the news director, goes, "Come on, I'll show you around. First of all, we've broken a story and beaten Channel 6, so he's cracking beers open for everybody in the newsroom." And I'm like, I'm mesmerized. He goes, "Let's go get something to eat." So we get in the car and he takes me through a Popeye's fried chicken. I'm looking at this guy. He goes, "We'll get it. You want two piece? You want your salt on your margarita?" I go, "What?"
Yeah.
That was when they were serving margaritas in the drive-thru. And I fell in love. And it never stopped. The love like never, ever stopped. But you're right. Once it happens, it's like a spell that's cast over you.
I was at watching Mardi Gras this last week and I was in D.C. And I heard one of our senators actually was telling a story. And this was hilarious. He said that, you know, Louisiana, had Louisiana basically been the Garden of Eden, you know, it wouldn't have been Adam and Eve. It would have been Boudreaux and Marie, right? And when the snake comes out and tries to tempt them with the apple, Boudreaux and Marie would have eaten the snake. And then the world would have been free of original sin. So that's the state of Louisiana for you right there.
God, I love it. We get to spend part of our lives in like the best place on earth. Coming up, Drew opens up about life after football. Stay with us.
Every parent is a busy parent. There's enough on your plate without piling on your kids' homework. And considering how much teaching methods have changed, most of us are a little rusty anyway. Consider IXL, an excellent resource for homework that can make a huge impact on your child's ability to learn. Backed by research, kids using IXL are actually scoring higher on their tests. Our techniques help them master topics in a fun way, complete with positive feedback. We're seeing improvements all across the country as IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. And IXL is also very affordable. 1 month of IXL costs less than the typical hour of tutoring. On just one website, IXL covers all the kids in your home from pre-K to 12th grade. Sign up today to get 20% off your membership at IXL.com/HODA. That's IXL.com/HODA.
Okay, so you take all of your know-how and now you're going down a different avenue. You studied business. That was part of your life. Everything you've learned through sports, obviously, is playing into this. But you have a new adventure that you're on.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. Tell me about your new adventure.
So I through my extended education and just all the things I knew I wanted to transition to after football, franchising was something that really... Mm-hmm. Became very exciting to me. And I think just at the core, you know, what is franchising? It's basically being able to take a game plan, you know, take a proven model and implement that to success. And you do it with a support system. It's all about building a team. It's all about building great brands. Mm-hmm. And that's always something that really resonated with me.
Yeah.
And my first foray into the franchising was actually as a Jimmy John's franchisee. So I show up to Purdue University in 1997. I'm staying in Wiley Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you know, late night studying, hanging out, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember three times a week, I would literally call up Jimmy John's at like 3 a.m. and order a number 9, which was the Italian nightclub, no cheese, add hot peppers. And that sucker would arrive 15 minutes later with some dude on a bike rolling up and giving me this sandwich.
Wow.
And I was like, this is the greatest thing in the world,
ever.
Right? So then I get drafted to the San Diego Chargers. I go to San Diego, no Jimmy John's. I go to New Orleans 5 years later, no Jimmy John's. The only time I can get Jimmy John's is when I went back to the Midwest, which is where it was founded, at Purdue University. So finally, 2011, so this is 10 years later after I get drafted. I'm sitting in the State Street location on the Purdue campus, taking a bite of that number 9, no cheese, add hot peppers. And I'm saying, that's it. Like, I am tired of only being able to get this when I come to the Midwest. I have to bring this to New Orleans.
Yeah.
So ironically, there was a walk-on quarterback named Carl Burgler, who I had stayed in touch with. He had worked his way through college, going to school, working at Jimmy John's, playing football. And now he was the VP of operations for Jimmy John's Corporate.
Oh my gosh.
So we had stayed in touch. I call up Carl. I said, Carl, what do I need to do to bring Jimmy John's down to New Orleans? He said, we just opened up the territory. Are you serious? I said, yes. So selfishly, I became a Jimmy John's franchisee because I wanted that number 9, no cheese, add hot peppers in New Orleans. But at the same time, I thought, you know what? What a great way to own my own business by taking a proven model, a great brand with a great support system in place, bring it to Louisiana, you know, introduce a business there that hadn't existed, be able to employ a lot of people and just have a lot of fun doing it. I learned a lot about business along the way. And I did. I was out there working with a real estate team on site selection, development,
did all the
negotiating leases and operations and everything. And so really like getting into the weeds on a lot of things and learning a lot about franchising at the same time. And so now we built out that market, but then it began like, okay, I've got the bug now. And I'm looking for other concepts. And I really developed a formula in my mind for how I evaluate them. First off, I only want to work with best-in-class brands and people. But first and foremost, it has to be authentic.
Yeah.
And I start off as a customer before I ever start looking as an investor from the business side, which was absolutely the case with Jimmy John's and every one that I've done. Secondly, it's all about the leadership and the culture that's in place. And third, the unit economics have to make sense, obviously. What I love about franchising is it gives people the opportunity to control their own financial future, to be their own boss. And I think especially coming out of COVID, where a lot of people, you know, you're remote and then you're just tired of going back. And like you love to be in a position where you feel like you're creating something, but you don't have to come up with your own idea and come up with your own support structure.
Something you love.
It's proven and you've got the support structure behind you. And
why did you want to go into business? Like you, I feel like you are such a passion person that I find it interesting that when you went to college, because you were playing football and that was your love, but you chose that lane. Why was that the thing you wanted?
I feel like I've always had a bit of this entrepreneurial bug. You know, I mean, I can remember as a kid, you know, I'd get my allowance, but it was like, well, but I want to go buy some baseball cards, you know? So the allowance isn't covering it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, well, I have this lawnmower. I guess I could just go knock on everybody's door and
ask
if I could mow their lawn for $5. So I had a nice little lawnmower business going as a kid. And I mean, I think that's just when, you know, the
little bits and pieces,
the thought of I really like business. I really like, you know, honestly with sports too is, You know, I love the affiliation of a team. I love building teams. I love being able to identify the strengths that each person has and then helping them to really take pride in their role and knowing that that ends up helping us accomplish this ultimate goal as a team.
I ask every person I interview this question, and it's one of my favorite questions. Someone asked me this, and I was like, it told so much about me, which I didn't know. But this person said to me, close your eyes for a second and imagine your childhood bedroom. Now look around, what's on the walls, what kind of sheets, what kind of books, what kind of toys, and then open your eyes and tell me what was yours like?
Oh, well, I shared a room with my brother, Reed. there was a lot of you know, sports posters. I remember a Nolan Ryan poster and a King Griffey Jr. poster because we were baseball players growing up. I remember we had our bunk beds with you know, the same matching comforters.
Always.
Baseball comforters. But, you know, and we did have Nintendo. You remember the Nintendo when it first came out, right?
Old school.
So it was Super Mario Brothers and it was Duck Hunt, right? And we would play that. Otherwise, we had a little VHS tape with a little TV and we would watch Golden Greats of Baseball every Sunday morning before church.
The Golden Greats of Baseball. Love this.
And it just documented, you know, the history of Ty Cobb to Babe Ruth to Ted Williams.
You loved it from just...
We were sports junkies.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, was your dad a sports junkie?
Yeah, I'd say my whole family was.
And your mom was. She was an athlete.
My mom was one of the best athletes in the family.
Wow.
She was all state in three sports in the state of Texas.
What were her three?
In the 60s. This was track, volleyball, and basketball.
My gosh.
She, in today's day and age, she would have been an absolute superstar.
Wow.
And all the opportunities that would have come along with, you know, college scholarship and professional sports with women now.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, that wasn't an option.
Right.
She literally went to Texas A&M University in 1968, right as it became co-ed. You know, prior to that, it was just a military school.
Mm-hmm.
And so didn't have the chance to play in college. But I remember growing up and her talking about Babe Diedrichson and some of these other female athletes. Mm. I mean, so I grew up with this appreciation for
women.
Like, yes, the history of
is athletes. Your mom still with us?
She's not. She passed away in 2009. Before the Super Bowl. But she lives with me every day.
She does.
I feel like the best of her lives inside of me every day. I think about her often. And she, you know, honestly, I look at my daughter now. And my daughter is such this little athlete. Now she's a gymnast, right? And so she probably does more cartwheels than she actually walks, right? But she is my little angel.
What do you tell your kids about your mom?
There's so many things that I see in them that remind me of her, and so we talk about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma Mina. And you know, they were, Balin was only 6 months old when she passed.
Wow.
And so the others didn't have a chance to meet her.
Yeah.
But, I just tell a lot of the stories when I was a kid and the things that she taught me.
Hmm.
And I know that she's watching down over them and she would want me to be telling you these things too.
They say when you say someone's name out loud, you know that they know that they're loved. And I think there is something about, you know, keeping that alive. My dad died when I was young, when I was in college, and my kids often ask me, you know, what did grandpa like to do? Like, and it's so intricate. So all of a sudden, because what is painful suddenly becomes like so beautiful. And, you know, I bet you he would like this and I bet you he would like that. Yeah. And I just think there's something so...
It's always so hard to deal with loss, you know, and everybody deals with it in their own way. And obviously there's circumstances around all of them. You know, I find that the thing that gives me, I think, just the most peace when I think about my mom or anyone that I've lost. I mean, my grandfather, we lost about 6 years ago. You know, he had lived an incredible life, 92 years old, World War II Marine, football coach, just teacher, mentor.
All the things.
I learned so much from him growing up is that, I mean, truly the best of them lives inside of you forever. Mm-hmm. You know, so while they might not be physically on this earth, everything that you do each and every day has a piece of them along with it. And the other thing, and this may sound corny, but you know, I love this Yellowstone series, right? Mm-hmm. Taylor Sheridan, Yellowstone, and then there's 1883 and 1923. But in 1883, there's a scene where one of the old kind of, you know, rugged cowboys, who, you know, he references having a lot of personal loss in his life. He makes the comment about everyone that has been a part of your life that maybe you've lost. They continue to see through your eyes, right? And so everything that you do and everything that you're able to witness, you're bringing them along with you.
That's beautiful.
You know, so there's motivation and inspiration to continue to strive and continue to do the things that you know that they would want you to do because they're along for that ride too.
Beautiful.
And
that's beautiful. They say that the first part of your life is about learning, the second part is about earning, and then there's a cool third part that comes, and it's about purpose and wisdom and all those things. You're kind of bridging the purpose and the earning part. But when you see that next chapter, because I feel like you've been of service your whole life. I feel like you and Brittany have been. And I see that lane like clearly for you, but how do you imagine the purpose part of your life or that chapter?
Yeah. The way I think about it is, you know, success to significance. Right. And so, you know, when you're young and I mean you're striving to become the best at something, you know, whether it's career driven or what have you. But I think along the way, you understand, number one, you learn a lot, you develop a lot of relationships, but I think you really begin to understand how you can utilize the things that you learned that help you be successful to now making a difference and mentorship. And I think it's a unique situation that I'm in now as I look at my kids and especially my boys. Because they're at that age now where it's, you know, my boys are 15, 13, and 11.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, look, those relationships are different than my daughter. Like my boy's like, you spoil Rylan, you give her everything she wants. I'm like, yes, she will always be daddy's little girl. And yes, she is my favorite. but the boys, you know, it's amazing what now at this stage, these teenage years, it's like they don't want to hear, they don't want to listen to dad anymore, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the challenge for parents is to put them in environments where they're hearing all the same things that you would be teaching them, those morals, those values, those things, but if it's a different mouthpiece, right? It has to be. And so inevitably, where does that come from? Well, it comes from teachers and coaches. You know, and so like that saying, it takes the village, you know, that becomes the village. That's such a true statement. On the flip side, I understand that I get to be the village for others, for other parents, right? That are going through the same thing that I'm going through, right? My kids aren't listening to me. Their kids aren't listening to them. But you know what? I have a chance to be a powerful influence in the lives of those kids.
Yeah.
That's why I love to coach.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think there's nothing that gives me more pride than walking around my kids' school and them call me Coach Drew or Coach Breeze, right?
What sports are you coaching?
Oh, football. I mean, everything. Football, baseball, anything I have a chance to kind of get my hands on. And it's one of those where, you know, the challenge for me, I think, with my kids is I don't want them to feel any unnecessary pressure for being, you know, the son of Drew Breeze or the expectations that come along with, right? I want them to be able to blaze their own path. Yes, Dad has this unique knowledge base and skill set based on what I did. And I always want to be there to help them with that. But they're at that stage where if they want that, they have to come to me to ask.
Do
hey,
they
Dad,
want that?
I want sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, it's funny. I've got kind of an agreement with most of the guys that I coach with where, you know, if their son needs to be coached, I do it. And if my son needs to be coached, I'll whisper something to them and then they'll go do it.
Yeah,
because they're going to listen to him more so they're going to listen to me right now. You know, but there's just that dynamic. But it's... I guess the point being is that I take very serious the opportunity that I have now to impart that mentorship piece and that wisdom on a lot of these young men because I want them all of a sudden in high school or college when they encounter a tough situation or some adversity or man they need a bit of advice that maybe I'll be that one that they call and lean on.
Love it. Still ahead, Drew talks about his new project and what he's making space for in this new season of his life when we come back.
Have you
ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Two more things. One, I want to know about your new franchise, because we haven't talked about that yet. Yeah. This is exciting. It's something you chose, something that is right up your alley.
Yeah. So small sliders. Mm-hmm. This is one of those franchise concepts that I just totally gravitated to, because it's fun, it's exciting, but I think that this will be one of the most unique and hottest brands in the country for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's incredible leadership and culture. Like, it's a fun, energetic vibe. Basically what it is it's a slider, fries, and shake concept, but it is a envision that you pull up and you see these big repurposed shipping containers all kind of stacked on each other, totally retrofitted with all the equipment, double drive through. You got somebody out there taking your order like an In-N-Out kind of a situation, but then you also have like this turf area patio, the string lights, you got a takeout window.
That's cool.
You got the drive through window. Everybody's saying thanks for sliding through. We got our own. We have our own color, smorange. We have our
own smos,
right? So we are we are taking the QSR.
What's the smos
like?
What's that taste like?
The smos, it's our special sauce.
Oh, yeah, I like it already.
You have to come try it for yourself.
Okay.
Down in Orange. So we're opening up a flagship location. This is actually me and my college roommates. So I am a partner in the company, but I felt so strongly about it that I was like, I want to franchise a location as well. So actually, we're going to build out the New Orleans territory. Me and my college roommates.
How
so we're opening up our first location.
Okay. I love it. I love it.
In New Orleans.
And lastly, we call this program Making Space because I feel like we all need to do that for ourselves and carve it out. And so when you want to make space for yourself, you want to take some time that's just for you. No kids, no coaching, no nothing. What would that look like for you?
That's a great question. You know, honestly, like if you said, what do I enjoy the most? I enjoy just watching my kids play. I mean, just being a dad and just being able to watch them and observe them and kind of just watch them move through life. And it makes me so proud. It's my greatest joy. Mm. It's the greatest responsibility in life. But that truly is what I want to do in my free time is just watch my kids, just observe it. And I think the presence there makes them feel that obviously dad will always be there.
Mm. There's a saying that says the way you spend your days is the way you spend your life. So you take your Monday and see how it breaks down and realize that that day is that week and that week is that month and that year. And it sounds like you got it all stacked up just right after all this. True, thank you. You know, I love you. I'm happy you
I love
came.
You too. Thank you.
Making Space with Hoda Kotb is produced by Allison Berger and Alexa Casavecchia, along with Kate Saunders, Katie Disler, and Brooke Burkhart. Our associate audio engineer is Juliana Mastro-Rilli. Our audio engineers are Bob Mallory and Katherine Anderson. Original music by John Estes. Bryson Barnes is our head of audio production. Missy Dunlop-Parsons is our executive producer. Libby Least is the executive vice president of Today and Lifestyle.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.